I'll call the Transportation Committee to order. It is March 1st, and is about 6 minutes after 1, and we have a quorum to do business. And so what the representatives that are present today are Representative Johnson, Representative Feige, Representative Pruitt, Representative Gruenberg, Representative Munoz, and myself, Representative Wilson. And I would like to recognize our staff today. Against the wall over there is Nancy Hemingway, House Recording Secretary. And in the corner is Sam. He's our LIO monitor. And my committee aide is Becky in the middle. So before we start, just a reminder to make sure you shut off your cell phones. Thank you very much for doing that. Today we have two bills on the calendar. House Bill 258, Naturally Occurring Asbestos. I plan to move this bill today, and House Bill 128, banning cell phone use for minors, and I plan to move this bill today. Representative Jewell and Brody, Brody, please come forward and introduce yourself. And we have a new CS before us, and would you like to move version X?
I will. Madam Chair, make sure I get the right. Madam Chair, I move the CS for House Bill 258. It's version X, dated 228, as the working document.
All right. Hearing no objection, we have version X before us. And Brody, would you please give us a brief introduction and then explain your changes?
Great. Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Brody Anderson, legislative aide to Representative Reggie Jewell. Before us today, we have version X, and to kind of give you a little bit of background on how we've gotten to version X, after our first meeting, I took a lot of notes on the concerns and on the bill, and we were able to organize a meeting with all the major departments that have some sort of concern or role in this bill. So we've met with Department of HES, Department of Law, Department of Labor, Department of Transportation, and Department of Environmental and Conservation. And we all got together in one hold up and worked out the kinks and through the recommendations that they had versus working out some of the concerns from the committee. We have version X going forward today. And so I'd like to bring the changes forth to you. And everybody should have the changes between version E and version X.
Do everyone have this?
Okay. And what I'll do is I'll explain where the change is and then what we were trying to do at that point. On page 3, lines 13 through 16, we went ahead and added legislative intent. And what this is trying to do is clarify that the program is both voluntary and that it provides immunity only for projects that comply with the site-specific plan. And that there was concern brought up that if we didn't specify that it was voluntary and at no time it's mandating that they have to comply, that it could be interpreted that they have to do it every single time. And that wasn't the intent of the bill. The next change is on page 3, line 27, and also it's the same change that's on page 4, line 29. And what this does is this changes, that this establishes naturally occurring asbestos gravel starting at 0.25 and above. So everything from 0.24 and below would be considered just aggregate material. And what this does is this is in compliance with the reading from California regulations and the intent of the California statute that kind of is one of the major states that actually has a similar program in operation. This is basically from lessons learned from them and actually comes from the recommendation from DOT of how to get around the measuring of what is considered naturally occurring asbestos. So, and those are those two changes.
Can I ask a question?
Representative Mignon.
Thank you. What is the percentage of naturally occurring asbestos in Ambler, in the area that you're concerned with?
Through the chair, Representative Munoz, I can answer relative from conversations that I've had with Lance Miller, who is the Vice President of Resources from NANA. I believe there is some representatives online as well, and they might be able to answer in more detail. But it ranges from naturally occurring asbestos that is by the river, which is as low as 0.02. or, you know, to up in the hills where you have Mount Asbestos, which has unmeasurable amounts of asbestos, which obviously is why the mountain's called that. So it really does range from where they're getting the gravel.
Okay. All right.
That's a descriptive term, I think.
The next change is on page 4, line 1. And what this does is there was concern that for third-party construction projects that it wasn't actually identifying the immunity to the requirements of the site-specific plan. So by adding, adding on line 1, AS4442410A, it directly links it to the site-specific plan in that part. On page 4, line 19 through 20, and once again on page 10, line 23 through 24, we actually add the definition of what is naturally occurring asbestos. And this also comes from working with DOT and how California defines it. Not that I, you know, agree with everything California does. They do track some things, and this was a really good example that they had, and it's working. It's actually a program that's working up there, or down there, actually. So we use theirs, which is naturally occurring asbestos means asbestos-containing material that has not been processed in an asbestos mill. And the reason why it's worded that way was there was concern that actually taking an excavator and just scooping gravel up and breaking up that ground for the first time, we're not changing the raw material of the gravel. It's still gravel that has asbestos in it. What an asbestos mill does is change that raw material into the fiber material that was once used for insulation and things like that. That's processed asbestos, which is defined in AS1831500. This is the raw material. And there's some scientific things that go along with that. The next change would be page 5, lines 10 through 14. And this was designed to establish the connection and need for third-party contractors to maintain the monitoring and mitigation plan if they want to preserve their immunity. So it connects. There was some question about whether or not once a contractor got done with the actual construction site, if there was follow-up, if there was further follow-up, there wasn't a direct connection of whether or not they have immunity even though they didn't follow through with their mitigation plan and monitoring plan, and this just clearly states that. On page 6, line 5 through 6, this just requires that DOT maintain a list of completed projects and the data that was collected that'll be submitted by the contractor. On pages 6, lines 27 through 28, we have the department. This connects the liability provisions to the site-specific plan for third party. And what happened was there was a disconnect between our immunity clauses, which was 09 and 18, to the actual site-specific plan mentioned in DOT's title in 44. And so what we've done is we've tried to thread the immunity clause is directly to the site-specific plans mentioned in DOT's section. The next change then is on page 7, lines 27 through 29. And this is the same sort of language. The previous one was for third-party projects. This one is for the Department of Transportation projects, but it's the same thing, tying the immunity sections of the bill to the actual section of the site-specific plan. Next change is page 8, lines 13 through 15. And this is just requiring, there was no language that actually required DOT to start the approval process once they received a plan. And there was concern that if we don't tell them to start the plan, they might not, they aren't required to start the plan. The next change is on lines, page 8, line 22 through 24. Excuse me, sorry. That's correct. This one connects the liability provisions to the site-specific plan for DOTM. The next one is page 8, line 30 to 31, which requires that the contractor, once they're done with the site-specific plan, they've finished the project, if for some reason they were required to have a monitoring station set up, any of the data that they would be required in the site-specific plan, the monitoring or mitigation plan, at the time the completion of the program, they would turn all of that data information over to DOT to hold. And then finally, the last change is page 9, lines 11 through 19. And I guess this would be the largest substantive change to the versions, which is it requires after 60 days of completing the project that was approved, the contractor will need to submit to the recording district and attach somehow to the property title the fact, notification of some sort that DOT can work out that actually conveys the fact that naturally occurring asbestos was used in the project, a brief description of where and how and things like that. And it lets it has here that the interest holders may have legal obligations with respect to preventing the naturally occurring asbestos from becoming airborne or otherwise transferred. And this is the question of, you know, mesothelioma, it doesn't happen in 6 months or a year. It actually happens more like 20 years down the road. And there was question about the liability immunity into perpetuity. 20 years down the road, how are we going to prove that a contractor today did it right? And this would be, this addresses that very thing, that the land titles will have a notification that naturally occurring asbestos was used, and those people can find out how it was used. And those are the substantive changes to the bill between versions E and versions X.
Brody, I have a question. And in that last change, on line 17, it says any subsequent holders may have legal obligations with respect to preventing the naturally occurring asbestos from becoming airborne or otherwise transferred. What about the present people? They're just acknowledging that we want it, we know it's here, we know the problem, but we're not going to keep it from being airborne. We live here and we've lived around it and we're not afraid of it. Is that essentially what this immunity type thing does?
Madam Chair, when the site-specific plan is approved, and maybe Department of Transportation can answer that question better, but it was the intent that with the mitigation plan, the monitoring plan, and the site-specific plan, all of that would sum up how it was used at that point and was approvable. So if for some reason it was laid on top, it was maybe say it was a few miles down the road from a village, and it was just used as top surface and it just sat there, at some point, there hopefully the approval process would acknowledge whether it's a good idea to just leave it on top and monitor the fugitive dust that might occur.
Okay.
So that would be current, and then.
So at this point, those agreements will be made in that site-specific deal, and it may say, well, within 10 miles of a road, it has to be sealed on the top, within 10 miles of the community. But after that, it doesn't have to be. I mean, is it that type of thing?
Madam Chair, if it could be taken care of in regulation and specify that, that would definitely be something that we would leave up to DOT and the experts to clarify.
Okay. Representative Greenberg.
I think I may be able to partly answer your question. This new subsection is a recording subsection, and it for the first time requires that there be a notice recorded. And what that legally means is it is a notice to the world. because anytime the property is transferred or anybody wants to find out anything about the property, and it relates to the liability of title insurance and insurance as well, they just go to the recording office and look, pull that up. And all this will simply say is subsequent transferees of the property or people who acquire interest, it's notice to them that they may have some legal obligations. And it doesn't say that they do. It just puts them on notice to check and see what their obligations are. Through the chair, is that not right?
Through the chair, Representative Goldberg, yes, that was the intent. That, you know, yes.
All right, Representative Pruitt.
Well, the one question I asked, and Brody and I kind of talked about this, he wasn't quite sure. I don't know. Actually, Max may be able to answer this, or Representative Bloomberg, I don't know if maybe Emily might be able to answer this. The one question that I had is when you attach something to a deed, does that affect the ability to get a loan on a particular piece of property? Are we going to affect someone being able to, you know, they'll start off investing in whatever. Maybe it's a house, although it sounds like that's a little separate. We're mostly talking about larger projects, but could it be passed on? Can they sell it to the next person? And I don't know, Max may have an answer for that.
Max, Representative Groomberg?
Yeah, that's good. A person either has or has not a legal obligation in this case. This simply puts the person and the world on notice. And sometimes, and it's going to be a different kind of a hypo I'm going to give you. Person A gives person B a deed. And then person A transfers the property again to person C. And person C records it. And person B does not. Depending upon the jurisdiction, and it's been a while since I looked at us, person C may be the legal owner because they recorded it first. And that may relate to the ability to get a loan. This is not exactly like that because, hypothetically, they either would or would not have the obligation. This simply puts the people on notice. Now, I don't know what obligation, what the legal, I don't know, maybe somebody in the audience or somewhere else can tell us, should a contractor fail to record, whether that failure to record and provide notice to subsequent transferees or people who have interests, whether that failure to record may give cause of action against the contractor. Not for anything the contractor has done substantively, but for the failure to provide notice. I could see an attorney in a court ruling that the failure to record might provide a cause of action, but I'd hesitate to say that without researching it.
I think maybe the question is, I have the property that is on that little information, bit of information is on the title, and my house is old, and I want to build a house. If I go to the bank, and maybe let's do it a little bit easier. I sold the house to my daughter.
To reach assistance,
the property.
Press 0. To enter a breakout session, press 1. To dial a phone number or get all missing invitees.
Okay. Anyway, I sell that property to my uncle, and my uncle now wants to build the house, and he goes to the bank. Will the bank say, oh, there's more liability there than we realized, we're not going to give you the money to build the house? Is that a possibility? That's the question that comes up.
Madam Chair, I don't know if the EC would be able to answer the question, but they do, when this language first came up, what the only connection that we really could find was the fact that DEC does there is, for contaminated sites, property that have contaminated sites, there is a similar, maybe, now that I'm looking, there was some sort of notification process, and maybe they might be able to talk about the value now.
Okay. Well, and what I see is I see vigorously shaking their heads. No, they don't know the answer to that. So it might be good for you to, before the next committee, to find out, figure that out and see what would happen. I had no idea.
Absolutely, Madam.
Representative Grunberg.
Madam Chair, I believe in certain cases there's an, and this is not with respect to this bill, but there's a legal obligation to abate asbestos, and that's an issue that was taken into consideration in the potential legislative office space. There's a lot of expense and time as a result of that, and I'm sure that was as a result of a legal obligation.
Well, I'm just trying to make sense in my head. If the house itself wasn't built with asbestos things in the house could probably be taken down and a new one built, as long as they're not using asbestos in the building of the house. So I'm assuming that that's probably the situation. But anyway,
yeah, Madam Chair,
Representative Pruitt.
Thank you. I think in this case it would be not what's in the house, but what's underneath the house. So is there, you know, kind of like where you could have concern when you go to get your loan and they say you're in a floodplain or something like that. Is there some of those little liabilities that may prevent them from the easy transfer over? I don't think it's worth in any way holding up this bill, but it's just maybe something just to make sure that we clarify so that we have a good understanding when we go ahead and pass it out that there may be an expectation that people won't have that opportunity. But in my understanding, and I do want to clarify, because we did have a good discussion on this before, is this bill is not necessarily intended for that those one home in the subdivision. This is for large projects. But if they do end up using it on a smaller type home, it'd just be good to understand what the person may be dealing with. So I think it's a good bill, and I think they're doing what they've done a lot of homework on it, and I think credit to Brody on this. So thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Any other questions? Seeing none. Brody, do you have any more explanations that you would like to add?
Madam Chair, not this time.
We do have people online that would like to testify. So let's go to them. I'm opening up testimony, and we have, oh my, yes, Miss Whiting or Whiting in Kotzebue, are the mayor of Northwest Arctic Borough? Are you there?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, and would you please pronounce your name? It looks like a beautiful name, but I'm afraid to pronounce it.
Mayor Sikorak Whiting, Northwest Arctic Borough. Greetings from sunny Northwest Arctic to all of you in Juneau.
Go ahead and
thank you very much for the opportunity to speak on behalf of House Bill 258. With this NOAA bill. Again, wanted to thank Representative Jewell and Brody for taking the lead in this really important bill as we move ahead. There are projects on hold with this, for example, expansion of home building projects. I'm glad, Representative Wilson, that you're asking these questions about the bill, because there are big projects, but there are home building projects as well that are on hold. They have an airport runway. There's the Grizzly Bridge to the airport, the Kobuk School. We're going to have increased river erosion this spring, and there's going to need to be emergency access to gravel as we have spring breakup because it's compromising power and phone lines in Ambler. So there's homes, water access that's going to jeopardize the lives and property of this, and it's not just Ambler projects, but it's also Upper Kobuk projects in Shungnak and Kobuk. The North Atlantic Boroughs just this past week passed Resolution 1205, and it's to facilitate the use of gravel or aggregate containing low levels of naturally occurring asbestos, and the North Atlantic Borough supports NANA and the City of Ambler's extraction, use of gravel for projects in the future. There's going to be a lot of mining in the Upper Kobuk Mining District, and of course we know that the governor put in, I believe, $6 million in a transportation study in the Upper Kobuk Mining District. So it would be imperative for us to take a look at this bill to prepare for all of the activity that's going to be happening in the Northwest Arctic. The gas and oil prices in the Upper Kobuk are extremely high. Between Ambler-Schoeneck and Kobuk, the high gas per gallon is at $10.46, and stove oil, $9.59 for the community of Schoeneck. And all the fuel is flown into these communities. And I just saw recently on the Alaska statewide news that Anchorage is appalled at the $4 a gallon of gas that they have to pay at the pump. And we are just doubling that price in our smaller communities. So the economy of the region in the Upper Kobuk Mining District is at a standstill until a bill like this is passed to have a healthier economy. So it's critical that we pass this bill for the much-needed projects to help the economy of the Upper Kobuk communities when our small communities thrive, all of Alaska thrive. So we just wanted to show our support and encourage passage of this bill so that the Upper Kobuk communities could continue on these much-needed projects that were on hold for many, many years. So thank you, Representative Wilson, and everybody there for your time and your commitment, not only helping us in the Northwest Arctic, but all of your districts as well, to make Alaska a better place to live. If you have any questions, I'm available. Kuinaktuk for your time.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Let's go on to Morgan Johnson with the City of Ambler.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. Can you hear me?
We can. Go ahead.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, and all the other committee members, representatives there, all listening and helping out. We do have Vice Mayor Scott Jones here present also. It's great that you guys are tackling into this problem. Hopefully we all can resolve it soon, you know, sooner the better. I just heard one of the reps mentioning, you know, illnesses may not start up overnight, what not, you know, but later on in the future, you know, 20, 30 years, you know, new illnesses may occur as long as this asbestos dust accumulates in the air as we drive over it, what not. It'd be best to cover it up and protect the community members that live in Ambler. Scott?
Can you hear me? This is Scott Jones.
Go ahead, Scott.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, Scott, are you also on with the city? State your affiliation. And
yes,
then.
I am the vice mayor. I'm sitting here with Morgan.
All right. Go ahead and give us your testimony.
Morgan and I have been through a lot of these meetings, and I skipped over some of the obvious stuff that I should have brought up at the House testimony last week and the Senate testimony. And I do also want to say thank you very much for your hard work on this. It's a process that we've been going through for the last 10 years. My comment, just to keep it kind of brief, should we accept the standards that California has and come up with a number to be acceptable to be clean gravel, to be accepted as clean gravel. I don't want to get into restricting ourselves so that we're just on the borderline. There's been enough research done so that there's the numbers in the area. We have the material in the area. We're on the south side of the Brooks Range. We have lots of gravel. There's been lots of tests done, lots of numbers. I believe the number was 0.025 for being acceptable, considered clean by California standards. But I didn't want to be restricted to just that number, considering the records and so on that we've already gone through, that there's been nobody with mesothelioma in this country to this point. And we had the least invasive type of asbestos up here, being the chrysotile, and California has seven different types, and they're much more toxic than ours, and they're still using that particular standard, as I understand. I just wanted to be cautious not to restrict ourselves and be, you know, shoot ourselves in the foot and be so close again. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Any questions? I'll go on now, and I'm going to, Ukalsak Oklisik, am I pronouncing your name right?
Good afternoon.
Could you just say your name again and then your affiliation?
Sure. Ubongatiga Ukalesak. My name is Ukalesak. I'm the planning director at the Northwest Arctic Borough. And just want to add to the mayor's comments that the borough does support passage of House Bill 258. The assembly just passed a resolution on February 28th, resolution 12-05. And I'm glad to hear the committee's discussion on the bill, and it seems like you're moving in the right direction in addressing the public health concerns, but at the same time holding it the level that the community development needs. The discussion on a home is really appropriate because the ability to build homes in Ambler and many places throughout our borough require gravel pads. And so as you heard from the mayor and also from the mayor in Ambler, that community development projects have been put on hold because the use of the gravel needs standards such as being provided through this bill so that it can be safely used. As you've heard from other people, that as long as the standards are put in place and the naturally occurring asbestos gravel is contained in some way through the construction process, it's safe for the community. And I think as we go forward with this, we're continually improving the safe use of a known resource in the gravel. So I just wanted to add that, and Teku, I'm also available if there's any questions or comments.
Thank you very much for your comments. Is there anybody in the room that would like to make any comments, would like to testify? Come forward, please.
Good afternoon. Roger Healy, Chief Engineer, Department of Transportation. I would like to clarify the 0.25 standard because it's possibly implying something which it is basically an analytical standard that California adopted, and what it basically, it is a test that is run where they grind asbestos-laden material and they lay it on a slide and go through a whole bunch of other processes, but they look at 400 points on a slide. If one fiber is under one of those points, you have a 0.025 or 0.25% asbestos. It is not a health standard. It is an analytical standard. So basically, if you have a hit on asbestos on that particular sample, it is naturally occurring asbestos material under this bill. If it doesn't have a hit, it's not naturally occurring asbestos material. So there's an accuracy, or there was a accuracy implied of between 0.24 or 0.25 that basically is not recognized in the test. And I just wanted to make that clear that it is an analytical standard that's being applied to that number.
Okay, thank you very much. That is good for to know. So really, we're saying that if they find any on that slide at all, then they can't use it.
It's basically a, and I haven't personally run the test myself, but it's my understanding that there is a grid pattern that they lay across the sample, and the lab person looks under each one of those points, and if he sees a fiber under one of those points, it registers as, you know, 1 in 400, or it may be 5 in 400, or whatever the case may be. But it's only, the lab procedure is only fibers under those points are recorded.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Any questions? All right. Thank you for clarifying that.
Yeah.
Okay. We do have, I'm going to close testimony then. And we do have, I asked at the last committee meeting that are both agreeable to these amendments. So, Max, if you would like to present your amendments.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If Brody, if you could come on up and signify position. All right, I would, the first one, and by the way, the first one I'd like to label page 3, line 20, following defendants as amendment number 1, with your permission, Madam Chair.
Amendment number 1, did you move it?
No, I just labeled it.
Okay.
I would like to move amendment number 1.
Okay. Hearing no objection.
Objection, just for the discussion. I wanted to confirm, is the sponsor, the sponsors put a lot of effort into this.
Yeah. Representative Pruitt, Brody.
Once again, for the record, Brody Anderson for Legislative Aid for Representative Reggie Jewell. At this point, all the conceptual amendments that we have going before the committee today, I've talked with Representative Jewell, and he is absolutely in agreement with the amendments, and he believes that they do make the bill a better process, a better.
I'll remove my objection, Madam Chair.
Okay. Let's leave it on just so that it's up front.
I'll leave it, my objection.
So we can have a little bit of discussion, yeah. And then you can remove it.
You want me to?
Please, okay. Representative Grunberg.
The language, if the members would look on page 3, the language that has been added in the committee substitute, the X committee substitute, on lines 13 through 16, really clarifies the types of actions we're talking about for immunity purposes. And the language down on line 21 in that area just generally talked about asbestos-related issues. And we talked about anything that could be related to the removal of asbestos or just a truck going through the asbestos area and causing an accident and stuff. And that's not what they're talking about. The purpose of the bill is to immunize, and I'm looking on lines 13 through 16, the use of gravel or other aggregate material that contains naturally occurring asbestos, and it's for contractors meeting the requirements of the program. And on line 23, it would, of course, include the state. And it just simply defines the types of actions that are being immunized against. And the sponsor and others drafted the language on lines 13 through 16, and from my view, that's perfectly acceptable, and I just wanted to be certain that that was the language that was in the section.
Okay, and Representative Gruenberg, would you restate your motion and make sure that you say it's a conceptual amendment?
My motion is to adopt conceptual amendment number 1.
Thank you. And
I object to continue the discussion, Madam Chair.
So for what I'm hearing you say, then, conceptual amendment number 1 deletes it, on line 20 on page 3, and inserts it, stating it a little bit differently so that it covers what we're actually, the intentions are.
The intentions are. The types of actions that would be covered are civil actions and it's regarding whether it's personal injury, death, or property damage that result from the use of the gravel or other aggregate material that contains the asbestos. And that absolutely follows the language in the intent.
Okay.
It's quoted.
Yes, and they take that for the language that was added on lines 13 through 16.
Yes, Madam Chair.
Okay. Would you like to?
Yeah, I'll remove it. I think this had been brought up before by Representative Gruberg, and I know we'd had some discussion, so I appreciate the clarification. So I'll remove my objection.
Okay. Conceptual seeing no other objection, then conceptual amendment number one has passed. Max, or I'm sorry, Representative Gruberg.
You can call me Max. I could make that not calling me late for dinner. But thank you, Madam Chair. The next amendment is on page 8, line 15, after location. It is conceptual amendment, and I'd like that labeled conceptual amendment number 2.
Can we move it?
I would like to move conceptual amendment number 2, and if somebody will object, I'll take it.
Object for discussion.
Okay, thank we have you, an objection. Representative Gruenberg.
I would like the members, please, to look at page 8, line 15, which is the subsection C. And the previous language dealing with subsection C in the E for echo version was on page 7, lines 22 to 25. And the new language requires the department to review the plans and make sure they can't just sit on them. The previous language was stated that if the material had 0% or less than a quarter of a percent, they might not be approved unless the department determined it was economically unreasonable to undertake a construction project with gravel or other aggregate material free from naturally occurring asbestos. The language speaks for itself. And when I talked to Mr. Anderson, we determined that it had been the sponsor's intent not to eliminate the old language, but to add the new language to the old language. And this just does that. And may I have Ms. Bennett, Chair? Mr. Anderson, am I correct in what you told me?
To the Chair, Representative Gruenberg, yes, the only thing that I did notice just now, though, is we would ask that in the old language, we still had the old more than 0%, less than or equal to 0.25. Mm-hmm. And if we could have that language changed to the new language in X, where we refer now to the gravel as starting on page 3, line 27, where it says having a content equal to or greater than 0.25% naturally occurring asbestos.
All right.
That would be the only change we'd have, because the idea is we don't, if it's economical to continue to use clean gravel and it's not going to have an impact, that's what this section was getting to, was they move forward only if it's economically unreasonable, and that was the idea there. So that would be the only change we'd ask.
Okay, Madam Chair, if I may. Okay. I think we need an amendment to the amendment in that.
Okay, so if I understand, the less than or needs to be removed, and then equal to after that or greater than.
Madam Chair, I would suggest that this is on the conceptual amendment number 2, that the amendment would strike the phrase on line 2 of more than 0% and less than, and we would insert, instead of that, equal to, well, we have equal to, that's the next, that's already in there. And then after equal to and before the 0.025, it would be or greater than. So it would read, that line would read, content equal to or greater than 20.25%. and if everybody understands it. Do you want me to do that again for the record? No, Nancy's saying no. So again, it would be content equal to or greater than 0.25%. And that, I would ask, Madam Chair, to be amendment, conceptual amendment number one to conceptual amendment number two.
So, Representative Munoz.
Just for clarification, then you, Representative Grunberg, remove the language 0% and
yes.
less? Okay.
More, yes. No. So the phrase
more of, than.
Of more.
Madam Chair, the phrase of more than 0% or and less than or would go. So it would be content equal to or greater than 0.25%.
Okay, hearing no objection, that amendment number one to amendment
question.
Representative Johnson.
Under this amendment, what if it's 0.01? Because it says it must approve, and you've limited it to just those two, and so does that mean if it's under that, it can't be approved?
That is considered to be clean gravel.
If it's 0.10, because what you're saying is it must be between this and this, is my understanding of the reading of it. So if it's less than that, but there is some, is that not approved? That's why I think you need the 0 to that number as opposed to just that number.
Madam Chair.
Representative Munoz.
I think in the earlier testimony from Mr. Healy, he pointed out that if there's a single fiber, it registers as 0.25. If there's no fibers, it registers below that and therefore is non-occurring asbestos.
Okay.
That's the way I understood it.
No, that makes sense. That makes sense.
That's why.
Okay.
We have non-lawyers.
Okay. So I want to rephrase that. Conceptual amendment number one to conceptual amendment number two.
That's right.
Yes.
Okay. Has passed. And now we're left with conceptual amendment number two. Representative Grunberg.
I would ask that the objection be removed.
Before we do.
Representative Johnson.
Can I get a definition of economically unreasonable?
Cost prohibitive.
By whose definition? I mean, there are going to be groups that say, I don't care how much you have to spend, you can't use asbestos, so $100 million to do this project is not unreasonable because we have to have clean gravel and you've got to fly it in. And that, I just want to know if there's a standard for what unreasonable is. Because there are people that want to keep projects from happening, and nothing's unreasonable. And so I just want to clarify, if nothing else for the record, that's our intention that this not be used to stop projects, but be used to say it's not reasonable and unreasonable. So I'm wondering if there's any way we can address that in any form or fashion.
Brody.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the Chair, Representative Johnson, I will attempt to take a stab at it, and then hopefully someone from DOT might be able to help me out. When we talked about economically unreasonable, that came up when we met with the administration, and we were trying to figure out at what point do these phases begin and how to move forward. And one of the things that came up was actually in DOT's Road to Resources executive summary on the road to Ambler. They set up all these criteria for evaluating different things, and one of those criteria were the establishment of available material, and the criteria was judged off of availability of material, the cost of the material to get it to the location of the road, and then how far from the actual location it was. And they didn't actually use the term economically unreasonable, but they actually rated their criteria from material that was within 5 miles scored higher than material that had to be brought in from 50 miles plus. And part of that was the economics, the economic associated with bringing it there. So there already is within the department a little bit of at least criteria rating of the impact of economics, and so that's why we went with economic unreasonable and then left it at left it up to them to kind of define or put more into regulations of defining that. So that was how it, at least that's the intent when it first was discussed.
So my question to you then, Brody, is when the department does its regulations on this, they need to make sure that there's an understanding what that really means. Representative Johnson.
Yeah, Madam Chair, and I agree with that 100%, and I want to be very clear for the record that this is a bill to assist in projects being developed and not a bill that can be used with terms like economically unreasonable to stop projects from being developed. So I think if, you know, just be aware of my concerns, and maybe I'm looking for the boogeyman where he doesn't exist, but there are mad skills out there.
Well, I think that's a very good point for us to bring up and to have on the record that this is a bill to help with projects that currently cannot go forward, and not to stop projects, but to help projects go forward.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Grunberg.
For what it's worth, in Sutherland statutory construction, they don't always look at committee debate, but they sometimes do look at what the sponsor of a bill or an amendment says. And I'll just put on the record that as the sponsor of this amendment, that is exactly my intention.
Thank you, Representative Grunberg.
Representative Mignot.
I have a question about the amendment, that next part of the amendment. It's continuing on, equal to 0.25% of naturally occurring asbestos by mass may not be approved unless the department determines that it is economically unreasonable. There's a double negative. I'm just trying to understand what the intent is. May not approve. If you could.
Madam Chair, may I respond?
Sure.
It's a conceptual amendment, and I would ask Becky to check with the Brody, to check with the bill drafters, and I can help you to make sure that's the most elegant way of saying it. But what it means is that if there's more asbestos, you cannot approve it unless the department determines it's economically unreasonable not to approve it. In other words, if that's the only source of material that's economically available, then they have the authority to approve it. And it may be a double negative, but
then maybe we should state it like that in the positive rather than the double negative.
I have no objection, and if it's okay with you, Representative Munoz, through the chair, let's leave that drafting to the bill drafter with the staff monitoring that.
Yes, and that's the reason it's a conceptual amendment, so that they can look at the wording and put it in the way that it fits in with the rest of the bill.
Yeah, I just took it from the E version, and that may not be, that is confusing, and they certainly probably can do it in a positive way.
Okay. Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so just to make it even more clear on the record, when we're stating the phrase economically unreasonable to undertake the construction project, we're meaning that it would be cost prohibitive. Is that the...
I believe that was the intent of what Representative Johnson said. Correct me, Representative Johnson, if I'm wrong, but I interpreted that's what you were saying. Am I wrong?
No, I think that's accurate, but thank you. But I think that reasonable has definitions to different people as to what would constitute what it would take to build a project, and some people who don't want it might think it's reasonable to spend more than people are trying to see it done. So I want to make sure that it's clear that we're trying to advance projects, not slow them down. So I think that's, you know, it's reasonable to fly in gravel to some people.
My interpretation,
Representative Grunberg.
Is Representative Johnson's and through the chair. Is that what you're
saying?
Yes, it is.
Representative Peterson?
Yeah, I agree. That's what we're trying to, that's the point we're trying to make.
Okay. Brody.
Madam Chair, thank you. Also, I'd like to draw the legislator's attention to the legislative intent, page 2, starting at line 17 through 21. Even though it doesn't address Representative Johnson's direct concern, it does mention, though, that in communities that do not have sources of gravel similar to aggregate material that is free of naturally occurring asbestos, costs of construction are substantially increased because of the necessity of locating alternative gravel sources or similar aggregate material. And then once again on page three, starting on line six, where we have, you know, eliminate significantly higher costs of construction and of maintenance projects. So once in the legislative intent, we did try to connect that as well, of the intent of the bill is to reduce those costs as well. So with that and also the suggestions from Representative Johnson, I think we can make sure that the regulations clearly state what is.
Representative Johnson.
Brody, thank you, but can you define a significant health risk? I mean, can you define a significant health risk? And I don't want any answers. I just want to advise caution, because there are areas here that, you know, full employment for lawyers, and that's not the kind of legislation that I want to see advance. So just cautious. So thank you.
Well, and we don't want to leave areas wide open for something like that to happen. So that's a good point. Representative Bloomberg.
Yes, I just want to say, I don't know that I would say that to be economically unreasonable, it would have to be cost prohibitive. I think if it's just significantly higher, so that it would make it very difficult economically, but to make it prohibitive, that could absolutely stop some. Mm-hmm. So I'd like to clarify, that's a little higher standard than I think in economically unreasonable. The test of reasonableness is what a reasonable person would be able to pay.
Any other comments? Do you remove your objection?
I will remove my objection, Madam Chair.
Okay, objection has been removed for conceptual amendment number two. So hearing no other objections, conceptual amendment number two has passed. Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The final amendment is, and please take the one that has the pen and ink correction of the typo on it. Nay. For those of you who are used to saying yay, it should be any. This is conceptual amendment number three. And I would move conceptual amendment.
Object, Madam Chair, for a purpose of discussion.
Okay, there's been an objection, and Representative Grunberg, would you like to explain your conceptual amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. If the members would look at page 9, line 11 through 19, that's subsection F, as in Foxtrot, in the X version, please contrast that to the same subsection F in the E version, which occurs on page 8, line 21 through 23. Once again, as I understand it from Mr. Anderson, it was the sponsor's intention not to substitute the new language, but to add it in addition to the old language. And the new language, which we have talked about a few minutes ago, is a recording language. But the old language also required the contractor to submit to the department the results of any monitoring or testing performed in accordance with the site-specific use plan and any mitigation measures undertaken. This simply will add the old language at the end of the new language on page 9, line 19. And I took the language, I believe, word for word, and would offer the amendment.
Any discussion? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this is for the sponsor. Are there requirements to do testing now? I mean, will there be requirements to do testing under this piece of legislation that's in addition to or maybe advance of what other places or other areas might have to do? This is not requiring someone to do a test that's not already required, is it, this amendment?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, that is my understanding, that this will not require additional testing.
But there are tests that will be required from DOT or contractor to use this aggregate material?
If I might feel comfortable to actually have DOT answer that one through the chair, just to clarify, just because I'm at this point, I'm not sure exactly how to answer that, so if I could defer to DOT.
And Madam Chair, what I'm getting at is we're requiring to submit any test, but do they have to do a test?
No, it doesn't say that they have to do it. It just says that the results of the monitoring that DOT has to do, did the contractor do anything to mitigate the measures because of that?
And I don't think so, Madam Chair. I think
to the chair. By the chair. Yes.
But this says the contractor shall submit.
Yeah.
So the contractor has to do the testing.
No, it says he should submit the results, not the results of the testing, but the testing said, hey, you can go ahead and use this aggregate, but it does have a little bit in it. So during that time, and it would depend on what the department says that they have to be done. The department might say you had to seal the top of it within 10 miles of a village or something. And so the contractor then is going to have to say what he did he follow up and do what was required of him?
Okay, but this says a contractor shall submit to the department results of monitoring or testing. And what I'm asking is, does this require additional testing from the contractor?
Madam Chair, maybe the department.
And that's to the plan, right? So
the plan requires.
And that's the question.
Okay. You heard the question, and could you answer the question, please?
I may have to have you, through the chair, Representative Johnson, I may have to have you repeat the question again, but I
guess maybe to get it a different way. Is it consistent with the site plan to require testing from a contractor?
And before you answer that, would you state your name?
I'm sorry. Roger Healy, Chief Engineer, Department of Transportation. The answer is yes. The there will be if a entity, owner, contractor, is seeking immunity under this bill and submits a plan, there will be a variety of tests required. Possibly, first of all, there will be some testing, it may have been previous testing done on material sites that would.
Can I interrupt?
Yes.
Who did the previous testing?
I would say that it would be specific to the material site. And it may be done by private parties, it may have been done by the department, but the intent, or I wouldn't say, the way the department will look at this is that the ultimate goal is public health. So the use of NOA material is allowed under this bill, and immunity can be. Go ahead.
Okay, so now, who's going to allow it? The department, right?
Yeah.
I mean, at the time,
mm-hmm.
is the department going to go out there and do the testing to, and then determine whether it can be used, or is the contractor going to go out there and do the testing? Who's going to do the testing?
If it is a third party construction, not a project that the department is doing. The department will rely on tests by either the contractor, the material site owner, or whatever it may be to identify that this material is of a certain either NOA or not NOA material. Also, the tests that are referred to in the mitigation plan are there is a federal requirement for air quality, both in workplace safety and mining safety, OSHA and MSHA, and it's an airborne standard, and there is a test that DEC is more familiar with, but it's used in buildings where you you basically collect fibers through the air. It would be incumbent upon the contractor to take those tests and submit them as evidence that workplace standards were not exceeded.
Okay.
Does that answer your question?
And then, yes, it does.
Representative Johnson.
Yeah, thank you. And I guess this amendment just says that they will, they have to submit it to the department is basically what this.
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, yes.
Yeah, and may I ask a follow-up question, a little different. Is there ever a situation where someone will do a test and not get the right results and do another test and they're different and they submit one of those two? And I guess the point is, would it be result of all monitoring and testing as opposed to any? I mean, is that a situation that someone could skirt the law or, you know, find a different tester or, you know, I don't know that this stuff happens, but once again, it could.
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, the tests, particularly the testing procedures to identify the level of naturally occurring asbestos, most tests of this nature to a lab typically have a chain of custody type procedure. Certainly, I'm sure if somebody wanted to break that in some manner and form, the department is not in the position to catch all.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't think we can fix the problem I'm looking at.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And myself looking at this, but I don't know how legal says, but it says with specific, and I'm thinking of the air monitoring that they have to do. If they did the air monitoring, I don't know how they have to do it. Right away after somebody runs through the area with a big truck, or they wait 5 minutes, it's better. So I'm saying that the site-specific use plan and any mitigation measures, so any, that testing means everything. But maybe to legal, in legalese, any means you can pick any of them. So I don't know what would be best here. Would it be better, you legalese people, would it be better to say, and all mitigation measures undertaken? I have no idea.
No, Madam Chair.
Representative Gruenberg.
I think we have some other folks from the department. Maybe if others would like to come up with Mr. Healy.
You know what? We do have someone online from the Department of Law. And is the Department of Law online?
Yes, Madam Chair. Sarita Angel from the Department of Law.
Did you hear the conversation as we've been batting this back and forth?
I did, Madam Chair.
So could you give us an answer to the questions that we're trying to decide on?
And if you could refer me again to the line number so I can make sure that I'm talking about the same thing, Madam Chair.
Okay, you don't have the conceptual amendment. So let.
I have version X.
Okay. Well, let me read what they wanted to add at the end of just this. It says, the contractor shall submit to the department the results of any monitoring or tests performed in accordance with the site-specific use plan and any mitigation measures undertaken. Does that mean all that they've done have to come in, or does that mean any, because we use the word any, does that mean that not very many of them needed to come in?
No, I would read that, and I did read that, as meaning inclusive of any and all. The word any means that there may be a mitigation plan that doesn't require any testing at all. And so basically it's the contractor shall submit all plans, if any.
Okay.
Is how to read.
All right. Thank you very much. That takes care of that question for us then. Thank you so much. First,
you're welcome.
Does anyone have any other questions for her while she's online? Okay, thank you. Any other questions for this conceptual amendment number 3?
Nope, I will remove my objection, Madam Chair.
Objection for conceptual amendment number 3 has been removed. So we have passed conceptual amendment number 3. Thank you very much. Are there any other amendments?
Thank you.
Seeing no other amendments, we do have the bill before us. Do I hear a motion?
Madam Chair, I move the CS for HB 258, version X, as amended from committee with the accompanying recommendations and fiscal note.
Madam Chair, I won't object, but I just want for just to make a statement.
Representative Johnson has objected to Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think this is an example of community and state and departments working together to solve a problem that is a little bit outside the norm. And I think this is an outstanding example of how when communities get involved to solve a problem, working with the administration and the legislature, that things can happen that benefit everyone with the precautions for the health hazards and everything. So I think this is a great example. I want to compliment the sponsor on doing this. This has been a long-term problem, and I'm glad that we're working it through the system. And with that, I'm happy to remove my objection and wholeheartedly endorse this legislation.
Okay. And thank you. Having that objection removed, House Bill, Committee Substitute for House Bill 258, version X, as amended, and with the accompanying fiscal note, and it was an indeterminate fiscal note, I do believe. Oh, there were several fiscal notes, so that went with it. Anyway, thank you very much. And so this bill has been moved out of committee then. Thank you very much. And I want to say, too, for these areas of the state where this is a concern, I really am excited for them because the economic development has been stifled in that area for quite a long time. And so this is really a red-letter day for them. So it's exciting to see this happen. And I, too, am glad that with everybody coming together that we've had some pretty great results here. So thank you very much.
Good job, Brody.
Good job.
Okay,
good
job. Let's briefly take a break. 28, Rep. Gardner, please come forward and introduce yourself and briefly reintroduce your bill to us. We have version A before us, and I don't think there have been any changes made. And let's just let you go ahead and testify.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Berta Gardner for District 24, Midtown Anchorage. And House Bill 128 is the original format. That's just the simplest of all the elements that are possible for a cell phone bill. It applies to minors only, who are our most vulnerable, most impulsive, least experienced drivers. It does not make any provision or exception for hands-free cell phone use, and it is a secondary offense, meaning there's a potential fine added to another problem if somebody's pulled over for a reason unrelated to cell phone use. And other than that, I think we're all pretty much aware of the issues around cell phone use for drivers, and people, I think, largely have their positions on those.
And I'll have to make a comment myself on this. I do have a problem making a law that they can't stop somebody. You know, if you can't enforce it, that's where I'm coming from. Why have it if you can't enforce it? You know, and so that's one of the things that it bothers me. But otherwise, go ahead and.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think the reason for that is largely that if it's based on somebody's age, it's hard to know how old someone is. So when we have alcohol sales, for example, people can be asked for ID. But if you're driving down the road and you're talking on the phone and somebody who sees you on the phone can't really know how old you are, and we would run the risk of lots of people being pulled over without any grounds, really, because they're of age to talk on the phone when they're driving.
Does anyone have any comments about the bill? Representative Grunberg.
Yes, Madam Chair, this is very technical. If the bill comes up for a vote, I think we have to change the last word to 2012.
Thank you very much.
Was that a conceptual amendment?
Well, they were right time somebody to do it.
Well, I don't see any other questions, so this is probably a better time, a good time.
Well, I'll make amendment. It doesn't have to be conceptual. Amendment number one to change 2011 to 2012.
Okay. Hearing no objection, amendment number one to change the last line to say 2012 instead of 2011. Okay, that amendment has passed. Any other comments? Okay, do I hear a motion? What's the wishes of the committee? Representative Munoz?
Yes, I'd like to move House Bill 128, version A, with attached, with individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal note.
As amended.
As an objection.
And there's been an objection, so anybody want to make comments before we have roll call?
Madam Chair.
Representative Johnson.
Yeah, I think my position on this is very clear, and I just, let's vote on it.
Okay. Would you please call the roll?
No.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
He's not,
not present.
No.
Representative Bloomberg?
Yes.
Representative Peterson?
Yes.
Chair Wilson?
Yes.
Four yeas, three nays, one absent.
Doesn't need five to pass.
No.
I'm going to move. Yeah, you just need four.
Yeah.
It moved.
Okay. What was the total?
Two.
Okay, then House Bill number 128 has moved out of committee. Don't even go until you sign the sheet.
Thank you very much.
Okay, because next week is the Energy Week, and we're going to have some people missing off the committee, so I'm just going to not have a meeting next week. And then we will start in again the next week.
Not even on Tuesday?
No. Okay, thank you very much, everyone. And that concludes our meeting, and we're over at about 2:25.
Madam Chair, I did want to say something. I appreciate the way you handled the committee and gave me the time to look at that.
Thank you.
And the courtesy on this last bill, too, because I was sick when you dealt with it.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Did you sign it?
I didn't. I don't have a pen. Okay, meeting adjourned.